The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
From the Sky Eye Weather Center, this is meteorologist Rich Apuzzo, and you are listening to our annual Global Warming Man-Made Climate Change Update here on the Flypod and linked to you through skyeyeweather.com. And I should start off by saying that if you've been listening to these for a number of years, you know where I stand on it. I am what the other side calls a skeptic or a denier, but I'm not denying anything. I'm simply giving you the facts, and the facts are that this entire thing has been made up from the beginning. And you might wonder how something so large worldwide could have been made up. That's a big conspiracy. Well, it really isn't that tough, quite honestly, if you think about it. All it takes is a couple of people starting with an idea, other people buying into the idea, thinking it sounds good, and then basing their decisions and their research and their funding dollars on these ideas. And then eventually that idea catching on to other people who say, hey, I think we could benefit from this. In this case, the IPCC and the United Nations and world governments. The goal being more power. The goal being another reason to tax people, to limit freedom, to limit growth. That was the entire goal of this thing. It was all an outgrowth of the 60s anti-war movement, and then, of course, the Earth movement, if you will, the first Earth Day back in 1970. That's where all of this started. Of course, back then, they were worried about global cooling, the next ice age. But remember, it wasn't because of natural cycles. They were worried about it because of pollution. Man's pollution was going to darken the skies, and we would block the incoming solar radiation, and that would lead to ice ages. Now, understanding all of this, science has never played a role. They claim there's science, but if you actually look at it, there's no science involved. It's claims based on junk science, we call it. So you can make all kinds of claims, but if you can't back it up with actual research, again, unbiased, peer-reviewed research that shows that your claims actually work, that they're valid, then it's junk science. It's like alchemy, all right? You cannot turn tin or something else into gold. But there were people at a time who said they could make gold out of other metals. And by saying it, people believed it was true. Doesn't mean it was. Same thing happens with global warming. And how it started out was basically a couple politicians and a couple of agenda-driven, government-funded scientists, you know, got together and said, hey, here's an idea. CO2's bad. You know, the goal, of course, was always blaming man. If you can blame man, then you can go after man. If you are anti-capitalism, if you are anti-free market, then you've got to somehow go after that free market. Well, what's the biggest driver of the free market? Energy. Oil, gas. And so their target was fossil fuels. If you can go after fossil fuel markets, you can take down an economy or limit it in such a way that the elite have what they want, but everyone else lives in squalor, basically. You start getting into a society that, you know, you're living back in huts and riding around on horses, but then you can't do the horses thing because you're abusing horses, so you have to figure out some other way of getting around. But cars would be bad. Even though they're promoting electric cars, but only a fool would think an electric car is green. Not only is it a poor way of getting around and unreliable at best, but it runs on electricity. Let's not forget that. And that electricity in that battery comes from a power plant that's usually coal-driven. And if it's not coal, it's natural gas. Or maybe water, but there's very few water, and water's unreliable too. You need a fuel that is reliable 24/7, 365. The sun is not that fuel. Wind, clearly not that fuel. Solar and wind are failed alternative energies. They're great for using in your backyard. Not even wind is good for that, quite honestly, because you're still killing birds. But yeah, they have some wind turbines that don't, small ones. But they're not good for anything major. They're not even good if you have a full family and you're trying to run a house. They're just a neat little, they're an accessory. It's like buying jewelry for an outfit. Yeah, outfit looks good. works fine, covers you up. That's the whole point of clothing. But if you want to make it fancy, you get the accessories. Well, that's what solar and wind are. We have reliable, cheap, clean power. Natural gas does that. Coal has been cleaned up quite a bit. Oil, they're all clean. But it's relative. Some people say, oh, no, it's not clean. It is. It is. We're not destroying the world. These are all natural things, by the way. You know, you've got to realize coal and oil and gas, it all comes from the ground. It's Earth making this stuff. So Earth is killing itself. If you think that these are all pollutants, well, Earth is polluting itself then. It all comes from the Earth. All we're doing is refining it so we could use it. If the actual oil was spilled as it comes out of the Earth, it's really disgusting, the crude. We make it better. So, please. But anyway, so you have to go after the energy. And wind and solar do not work. They simply do not. They're fine for certain things, but never on a mass production basis because they're costly, they're toxic, they're highly toxic. Wind is especially deadly. Solar is terribly inefficient because there's only certain places in the world you can really use it where you get enough sun, and the sun's not always out anyway. And then we don't have, nor will we ever have, efficient battery devices that could store it when the sun is not out. Now, there'll be batteries they'll come up with. When I say efficient, I guess I should better define that as clean, green, reliable batteries, because batteries use chemicals and metals, in many cases rare earth metals, things like that in these large batteries that are simply terribly toxic. You don't want them in landfills. It's like these light bulbs, these stupid light bulbs a lot of people use. I've even used some of them. These CFLs, compact fluorescents, dangerous, inefficient, they don't save you money. They don't last nearly as long as anyone says. In fact, they don't last longer than incandescents. I know I have a number of these stupid CFLs running. I can't tell you how many I've had to replace in just 2 years. I just moved into this place, and the local energy company provided boxes of these bulbs. That's great. Free bulbs. Of course, they're not free. It's part of your electric bill, but all right. I'll try them out. And sure enough, I've replaced three or four of them in the first 2 to 3 years of living at my new residence. Well, incandescent bulbs at the same time, they're not lasting any longer. Then you come to find out, well, you know, it's probably not best to have CFL bulbs on switched outlets. Really? Well, who's going to leave the light on all the time? You got to have a switch, turn it on and off. But if you turn it on and off a lot, apparently it's bad for that bulb. Well, incandescents don't have that problem. Incandescents, if you break them, don't have a poisonous gas on the inside like the mercury does in these bulbs. Actually recommends you get hazardous materials cleanup crews to take care of it. You don't have to do that with an incandescent. You can smash them all over the house. Just clean up the glass, you're fine. CFLs? No, they're dangerous, which means they're also horrible for landfills. So all these ones I'm throwing out, and let's face it, you just throw them in the garbage. Who's going to waste time trying to get a specialist to come out and clean up your CFLs? You throw them in the garbage, they go into landfills. That's what garbage is for, landfills. And if you can't put it in the landfill, you shouldn't be selling it to me. So, you know what? I'm going to use as many incandescents as I can, but these CFLs that I got free, I mean, I didn't pay for them, but they're all part of the electric company, whatever. I'll use them up, and they'll go pretty quickly, and they don't burn as bright right away, and you got to let them warm up. Typical thing with the compact fluorescents. And eventually, and then there's been other studies that say that they even put off a little bit of a gas that if you work next to them too long, that could be hazardous. I don't know how true that is. All I know is this. They are an outgrowth of the global warming movement. They are another bit of junk science because they never lived up to their claim. They're not saving you energy. They're not saving you money. All right, because if you're replacing them just as often and they're hazardous, in the end, they're actually costing us more money than the incandescents. Even if incandescents burn hotter, and you know what? The heat from incandescents has actually been used inadvertently. We didn't know it, but when you have a lot of incandescent lights on, it's heating the air in your house. The CFLs aren't doing that. So the incandescents added heat to your house, and for many places in the wintertime, that's nice. Offset that heating a bit. Well, now with the cooler fluorescents, you don't get as much heating. So maybe you're saving some energy from them, but you're turning on your furnace more. You see, these are called unintended consequences because the people who are pushing these agendas, they don't care what the result is. They want the agenda. They want to change things, but they don't think it through to say, what is this really going to do? And that's why I say they don't care, because I don't think they actually give any time to think of it, because if they did, they'd say, gosh, this is going to turn into, mercury in our landfills from the CFLs. They really don't last as long as we say. They're certainly not attractive. You can't use them in some dimmers, although I think they've come out with some that work in dimmers. They're really expensive. What else can't you do? I mean, there's just a lot of stuff. They're limited. See, the beauty of incandescents, you can use them anywhere. But CFLs, not so much. So typical in our great society, others came up with LEDs, and that'll be the next big thing. Truly efficient, not as toxic, although very costly right now. But I would be all for going back to incandescents. There's nothing wrong with them. So that's what the global warming movement did. This is the junk science that came out of that. There's a lot of other things, low-flow toilets, you name it. A lot of stuff that came out of this movement against man. Regulate people into subsistence almost. But they don't want to get it that low, but they don't want you to really succeed either. They don't want you to live, unless you're an elite, you don't get the lavish lifestyle. And that's what global warming was all about. There's nothing wrong with CO2, but you have to make it a pollutant if you're really going to go after it. But it's not a pollutant. But the EPA says it is. Well, the EPA is not a bunch of experts. The EPA is an agenda-driven organization. They're a government organization. They want to impose regulation. This is how they survive. Without regulation, there would be no EPA. They have to have regulations. And so they fabricated this thing about CO2 being a pollutant, but it's not. But see, it's how you define it. If I said that anything in the atmosphere that was 200 parts per million or higher as a level of the atmosphere is a pollutant, then I can name all kinds of things that are pollutants. You come up with a level, declare that a pollutant, and then everything that fits into that is now a pollutant. And since the EPA is not an organization that works off our votes, they run their own little show, and we gave them the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act, and by doing that, under the Clean Air Act, they could say, well, if it's a pollutant, Clean Air Act says we can regulate it. So now they want to regulate CO2. But CO2 is not a pollutant. It is actually the most life-giving gas on the planet. You won't hear anyone say that. The most life-giving gas on the planet. And again, just think back to, you know, chicken and egg type stuff. Without CO2, there would be no life here. So that's why I call it the most life-giving. You can have an Earth filled with oxygen, but nothing would survive. Because everything that uses oxygen needs CO2 to survive. Animals and people breathe in oxygen. But what do we eat? Well, we eat animals. What do animals eat? They eat plants. We also eat plants. What do plants use? Well, plants use CO2. If there was no CO2, there would be no plant life. And if there's no plant life, there can be no animal life. It's just really common sense. Obviously, if there was no oxygen, we couldn't survive either. The point being, CO2 is not a pollutant anything more than oxygen is a pollutant, or any more than water vapor is a pollutant. And CO2 is a trace gas. It's barely detectable. If not for high-tech instruments, we'd never know how much there was. 200, listen to the scale, 200 parts per million. It's not 200 out of 1,000, or 200 out of 10,000. Or 200 out of 100,000, which would still be really small. It's 200 out of a million. I want $1 million. I'm giving you 200. How impressed would you be about that? Oh, he gave me $200 out of his 1 million. It's nothing. It'll go in for gas and a few expenses in a couple of weeks. $200, gone. 1 million? It's going to last you a long time. So the fact is, 200 parts per million is minimal of a life-giving gas. I can understand getting upset if it was a poisonous gas, but I'm not even sure that 200 parts per million of a poisonous gas is all that high. But I'm not a poison expert. But it's not poisonous. It's life-giving. Plants love it. We've had levels on this planet based on actual research of ice core studies, not some stupid computer models. Actual research shows that we've had levels of 7,000 to 8,000 parts per million. NASA and the U.S. Navy allow CO2 levels in their submarines and spaceships at up to 10,000 parts per million. They consider that safe. Well, if it's safe for people to breathe in, then where is it unsafe? Because it's not like there's a lot of plants on these spaceships and submarines. There's people. But you'll let the people breathe CO2 levels of 8,000 or 10,000 parts per million. That's okay. But in the atmosphere, 400 parts per million, that's somehow a pollutant. Right, that makes sense. You see, the thing is, plants love this stuff, and we've had higher levels. We've had higher levels during ice ages. When the planet was covered in ice, or a good part of it was, CO2 levels were higher. You know, the CO2 levels that we had a couple hundred years ago, 200, 250 parts per million, whatever they were, that's about as low as this planet ever gets. That's on the verge of CO2 starvation. There's actually a point at which plants will die because they don't have enough CO2. Again, well-known in science. Look it up. So just in the last 200 years, we were darn close to that. We don't want to go down. We want CO2 to go up. I want my plants to live. I don't know about you. I'd love to see my trees flourish and my garden grow better. And you know what? They've done lots of studies. You could see them online. They put these plants in the little glass containers, some with the real high levels of CO2 and some with what we have now. You would you'd love to see the lushness of these plants with the high CO2 levels, leaves everywhere, and they would grow so much faster. And by the way, CO2, when it is higher, plants use less water. So if you get into a bit of a drought, but you got high CO2 levels, plants will survive. How is that possible? Because they're using that CO2 as food. They don't need to take in as much water because they're actually creating energy more easily. They're creating their plant food more easily because there's more CO2 out there. Again, studies have shown it. Look it up. Increased CO2, reduced water usage by plants. Exactly what is bad about CO2? Can someone tell me? Oh, and here's another fun little fact for you. The carbon dioxide that man produces has a certain isotope. I believe it's 14. It's either 12 or 14. I think it's 14. Nature might be 12. There's these two isotopes. We can actually track it in nature. The isotope that man creates has a half-life of about 7 years. In other words, it's down to whatever half of what we put into the air in just 7 years, and then after that, you know, another 7 years, it's about gone. I mean, the fact is, the CO2 we put out does not last forever. It has not been piling up since man started pumping CO2 into the atmosphere. It just hasn't. But you would not hear that from the other side. And they know this. Well, the scientific ones do. There's a lot of the believers who just buy into, ever since man started pumping out fossil fuels, that CO2 is still around. It's not. It's not. It actually has a half-life. So we can track it. That's the beauty of science that sometimes goes after the agenda, and the agenda people say, oh, we got to keep science out of this. Science bad. Agenda good. So, yes, the isotopes for man-made CO2 show it has a half-life of about 7 years, whereas the natural CO2 lasts a lot longer. By the way, again, we are just a trace of the overall trace. I think man's contribution is like 5% of the total CO2, which, again, the total CO2 is about 0.04% of our atmosphere, and we're contributing about 5% of that. You couldn't begin to measure that out. Realistically, if you had an instrument, you could not tell when man is putting more CO2 in the atmosphere. There's just no way of knowing. It's too small. And we've only have a couple of reliable instruments around the world. I think the main one is over in Hawaii that's measuring CO2. Interestingly enough, not far from a volcano. I don't know how that works. But the fact is that CO2, the man-made CO2, is barely detectable. And let me tell you something, CO2 is not a magic gas. Oh, it's life-giving, but it's not an all-powerful magic gas, meaning that a trace gas like that cannot create the warming that some claim it does. There's no way that the people on the global warming believer side of this thing can stand by any science with this. There's nothing in science that says a trace gas can have this type of warming impact. It can't. It simply can't. CO2 doesn't have that power. You'd have to have it in the thousands of parts per million to possibly do any of the warming. And by the way, it does not warm geometrically, and I forget the exact term, but if you double CO2 and triple CO2, the warming is not double and triple. Actually, after a certain point, the warming is negligible. And CO2 really doesn't do warming. You got to understand, CO2 is simply a gas that's taking the energy and re-radiating it. There's no such thing as hot CO2. People say CO2 traps the heat. No, it doesn't. You can't go into the air and say, hey, look at that hot CO2 up there. It's not trapping it. It's simply re-radiating it. It's keeping it in our planet. Okay, that's great, but it's a trace gas. You know what the big gas is? Water vapor. That's our biggest greenhouse gas. Go suck the moisture out of the air if you want the air to cool. But trust me, this planet would get ridiculously cold and everything would die. Cold in this planet has historically been evil, bad stuff. Dark ages are during colder periods. Ice ages are not good for man, animals, plants, or anything else. One thing you don't want to have this Earth do is cool down. It can't harm it to warm up. It has never been so warm in its history that we can't live in it or on it. And trust me, it's been a lot warmer than we are now. It's not turning into a fireball. It can't trap all that heat in. You wouldn't believe how much escapes out to space. That's the other thing the IPCC and others have not taken into account. They call these things forcings. And let me tie this quickly into In October 2013, the IPCC, that's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, under the auspices of the United Nations, put out their fifth assessment report. It's called AR5. If you look up IPCC AR5, you'll see some information on it. Again, it's all an agenda thing. Read it if you want, but you're not getting the facts. Scientists have looked at their report. It's a joke. It's a scientific joke. They actually claim 95% certainty that man is warming the planet. The only problem is there's absolutely no data in their report to back that up. They actually did a hand sort of pick thing. Hey, who thinks man's warming the planet? Raise your hand. All right, we're going with 95% certainty. That's how it was done. There is absolutely no data that they can point to, and they've been asked about this. If you look at their full report, there's nothing in there that shows certainty of anything. In fact, they had a piece of information in this report that was missing, that was in all the other reports, and it's called the climate sensitivity ratio or index, something like that. It's a number they use that you're supposed to use in calculations to figure out how much the planet is going to warm. And this little fractional sensitivity number, this their little thing that says, here's how sensitive we think the climate is to X amounts of incoming energy and whatever else, this number was not there. They had a little footnote saying, well, we had a lot of disagreement on what it is, so we really don't have a number. Which in plain English says they don't know. There is absolutely no indication of man's influence on the planet whatsoever. They have no number because there's no number they can have. There's no evidence of warming. Let me give you the facts. I don't want this thing to run on forever. So here are the facts of the case. Since 1997, there has been no statistically significant warming of the planet. What does that mean? That means in statistics, there's a certain amount of, you know, increase, decrease, certain numbers you have to reach to be called significant. If you were to look at a trend line on a graph, it is flat. Actually, we've cooled in the last 4 or 5 years, just a little bit, but we've cooled. No warming since 1997, actually. 17 years, approximately. And that was the critical time that some folks at the IPCC said that would determine whether or not global warming was real. They said it was real, and people in the past are saying, no, it's not. And they're saying, well, but we've only had 10 years without any warming. You need 17 years. All right, well, we've had 17 years. Some models, some data records actually show it longer than that, but let's go with 17 years. We're there, and they're still saying, well, no, we're going to keep warming. This has just been a little pause. Really, what caused it? Well, there's been some natural variability. The oceans have cooled and maybe volcanic aerosols and pollutants. Okay, so are you hearing what you're saying? Natural variability has somehow limited the warming that man should otherwise be causing. Do you see or hear how foolish that is? The fact is, climate is all natural variability. Man is playing no role. And the reason their models, which they claim are good, which are absolute failures, if you ever used a model like this to predict your life, you'd never know where your life is going. You really would not. Every one of their models predicted warming, and it wouldn't matter what data you put in, the model spits out warming. What haven't we done in the last 17 years? We haven't warmed. Not a single tenth of a degree. So every one of their 70-plus models was wrong. Every one of those models was wrong. Those models suggested that there would be decreasing ice levels at the Arctic and Antarctic. We've had ups and downs in ice levels in the last decade. In the last year, ice levels in the Arctic have grown 60%. Some were saying this should be an ice-free Arctic summer into fall, October 2013. Not only has it not been ice-free, 60% increase since 2012. The ice melt ended about 2 weeks sooner than it typically does in an average year. Temperatures in the Arctic were running below normal all summer long, 2013. You can't get it more wrong than that. When your models all show ice disappearing and you've got ice increasing, that's a problem. But it gets better because one might argue, well, 2012, we had a record low of ice in the Arctic. Yeah, we did for one period of 2012, but now it's 60% greater. So what does that tell you? Neither of us win the argument in that case. All right, so let's go south. Antarctica. Records for ice, record high levels, day after day, week after week, month after month. Not every day, not every week, not every month. But in the last 2 years, amazing numbers of records for the largest ice ever seen there since they started tracking it on satellites back in the 1970s, which, by the way, is the same data they're using for the Arctic. And when they say the Arctic has been seeing shrinking ice, when did they start tracking it? The 1970s. When was the last really cold period we had on this planet? The 1970s. What do you think would be at high levels in the 1970s? Arctic ice. What they've done is started their period of record at the time the ice was the greatest in modern history. Obviously, it's going to go down. It's not supposed to stay there. We have had ice-free periods in the Arctic many times in the past. Records show it. This is why they choose to look at temperature climbs since the 1850s. Why? Because that was the end of the Little Ice Age. So you just came out of a cold period that lasted 300 to 500 years. I look at records and really you could argue it started around 1300 AD, lasted about 1850. So 500 years, although there were some pauses in there. But over time, that 500-year period is basically the Little Ice Age. There were a number of what they call minimums of solar activity that were tied to these ice ages. So what happened in the 1850s? We started warming. Why? Because the Little Ice Age ended. What are you supposed to do when an ice age ends? You're supposed to cool down? No. You're supposed to remain steady in temperatures? No. You warm up. The ice age ended. And in geologic time on a planet millions and millions of years old, when you're talking about 200 years, are you really talking about a significant period of time? I don't think so. So we've warmed since the 1800s. Ooh, big deal. I hope so. We ended the Little Ice Age, which, by the way, the IPCC and some other scientists tried to hide. In graphs, they tried to make it look like the Little Ice Age wasn't there. They tried to make it look like the medieval warm period wasn't there. By the way, the medieval warm period, which came before the Little Ice Age, was warmer than we are now. In recent years, they've been forced to put that back in their graphs because too many scientists know it's real. Ice cores show it. Ocean sediment shows it. They know it's there. Tree rings show it. They tried to massage it out with little magical tricks that James Hansen and others in the left side of this debate, the folks with the agenda, the folks with the religion, they actually tried to get rid of that data and make the past look colder and the present warmer so that all they're showing is, hey, look, warming forever. Since man's been around, the planet has warmed. That's not true. In fact, if you really look at the data, we've had a number of cooling periods since the 1850s. Most notably, the 60s and 70s here, we cooled down. There were other times. Then in the 80s and 90s, we warmed up. Do you know what happened in the 80s and 90s? A couple of strong El Niños. That's big warming of the ocean waters. Man doesn't control that. Ocean waters warmed up. In addition, the sun had three of its strongest cycles from the late 70s through the early 2000s. Yeah, three of its strongest solar cycles since the 1700s were in the 1970s. Three of the strongest. There were a few others that were strong in the past. By the way, all since the Little Ice Age. Guess what happened in the most recent solar cycle? Cycle 24, the one we're in now. The weakest in nearly 200 years. Everybody agrees the weakest in 100 years. I say it's longer than that. Because we see more on the sun than we ever could before. And if we were to fairly judge the energy output of the sun using the same tools, technology, and observations we had 200 years ago, this would clearly be a much weaker sun than we're seeing it right now. That being said, even with the better technology, the weakest sun in 100 years, I say 200, doesn't matter. Guess what? Sun's weak. What's the planet been doing? Oh, cooling. Last 4 or 5 years. Do you think there's a correlation? We warmed from the late 70s through the 90s, three of the strongest solar cycles in history. In our recorded history, 1700s. Then we leveled off and started cooling just about the time the sun started to get weak. And the only reason that we even warmed in 1998 or 7 was because of a strong El Niño. El Niños are a big, massive area of warm water in the equatorial Pacific Ocean. And when you have warm water, it releases that warmth into the air, and guess what? The air warms up. The planet warms up. The Pacific Ocean is the biggest body of water on this planet. If you have a large chunk of that big body of water warming up, it's going to warm the air above it. And that's going to spread around and global temperatures go up. Pretty simple to explain, actually. So, They can't explain the pause, as they call it. They can't explain the fact that we haven't warmed in 17 years. They can't explain why ice hasn't disappeared at the Arctic. They certainly can't explain why Antarctic ice has been at record levels. If you're warming a planet, ice should not be growing or setting records for high levels. Sea levels are not increasing. Not at anything significant. Do you know what they're measuring sea level increases at? 1.8 millimeters per year. Think about that. Get a ruler out. Okay, I'm getting a ruler out. I got this ruler in my drawer here. And it's got the metric side, as these rulers do. 1.8 millimeters. By the way, you have the English side and the metric side on this little plastic ruler I have. You know what starts on the metric side? Centimeters. The 1, 2, 3, those are centimeters. If you want to go to millimeters, you got to go to the little dashed lines between the centimeters. 1.8 millimeters is like a scratch mark on this ruler. It's like the end that's sort of worn off. That's about 1.8 millimeters. How ridiculous. That's what the sea levels are supposedly increasing each year. It will take thousands of years before you need to move out of New York or Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, or Miami, Florida. But the only problem is the sea levels are actually going to start going down in the next decade or so. How do I know that? Rich, you're making some wild claims here. No, I know they're going to go down because that's what happens with sea levels. They don't just keep going up. By the way, do you know why the sea levels have been rising in the last couple hundred years? What did we come out of back in the 1800s? What was that? Oh, yeah, the Little Ice Age. When you have all this cold air, means more ice. When you have more ice, what are you taking up more of to make the ice? This is a tough one. What do we use to make ice? Water. So there's less water in the oceans when you have more ice, especially ice on land. If you have ice floating on the water, then the displacement keeps the water at the same level. Have you ever put ice into a drink glass? Try and do that sometime. Put a bunch of ice in a glass, then fill up the glass with water. Let the ice melt. Let me tell you what's not going to happen. The water is not going to overflow. You see, even if all the ice melts, the water level doesn't change because the ice is displacing the water at an equal amount. It's not going to change. That's why these fools who say, well, if all the Arctic ice melts, our sea levels will rise. No, they won't. They'll stay the same. The ice is floating on the water. Now, if all the Greenland ice melted, that's on land. Or the Antarctic ice melted, that's on land. That's a different thing. So what happened? Little Ice Age. Really cold. We had more ice on land. More moisture was turned into snow and ice. So there was less of it in the oceans. The oceans were lower. Then what happened? We started warming. Why? Because the Little Ice Age ended. I hate when that happens. All right, so the Little Ice Age ended. We started warming. What do you think is going to happen to the sea levels? They're going to rise because the ice is melting. That built up on the land, the bad stuff. We don't want ice all over the land. But it makes pretty glaciers. I don't care about pretty glaciers. Glaciers are fine, but glaciers are transient. They're not supposed to be there permanently. They're meant to come and go. That's how glaciers work. And they are very destructive. Glaciers are not good. You can't build around them. You can't live around them. They eat away at mountains. They destroy trees. They'll kill off animals. Glaciers are not a good thing. They're ice. They're just ice. Nothing's living in the ice. Nothing needs the ice to live. Polar bears aren't making drinks with ice cubes that they need ice. So anyway, the planet warmed. The sea levels rose because they're supposed to rise when the planet warms. Why'd the planet warm? I said this already. We came out of a little ice age. Okay, so now we're at 1.8 millimeters per year. I want to build some beachfront property. You want to move away? I'm building. Because not in my life, my kid's life, my kid's kid's life, or their great-great-great-grandchildren are anyone ever going to see sea levels washing away their homes. Hurricanes might, yeah. You know, tsunamis might, but not sea level rise. Not going to happen. All right, so that's a failure. And by the way, yes, the IPCC was predicting, you know, how many inches or feet. Al Gore had it at, I forget, like 10, 20 feet. He showed these projections on these nice animated computer graphics of, you know, New York going underwater, Statue of Liberty, and you know, other buildings being flooded. It's not going to happen. It's simply not going to happen. All right. And by the way, even if all the planet's ice did melt, you wouldn't get those kind of sea level rises. There's a lot of other things. See, here's the problem with what the IPCC and others do before I let you go here. They assume forcings only go one way. That means if there's more CO2 and CO2 can help with warming, then everything must warm. They don't take into account negative feedbacks. They assume everything is positive, meaning that, well, maybe if there's warmer air, it means there's more moisture in the air because more warmer air can hold more moisture. And if there's more moisture, there may be more clouds. And if there's more clouds, that's reflecting sunlight. So that actually offsets some of the warming. See, that's called science, taking all possible things into account. But if all you do is look at CO2 and say, well, that makes more warming, and warming means we're going to melt all the ice, you've missed all the other feedbacks. Feedbacks are not just positive. There's a lot of negative feedbacks too, meaning that things that would cool the planet. So, you know, the whole premise is just terribly flawed, the whole global warming thing. But they intended it that way. It was never about science. It was about regulation. What else, real quick before I let you go? Polar bear numbers at all-time highs. They're having to kill them off. Too many of them coming into cities. They're hunting more of them up there in the northern territories, northwest territories, northern Canada. Why? Too many polar bears. Lots of polar bears. 25,000, I forget what the number is, ridiculously high. So they're not disappearing. Coral reefs, not going anywhere. Ocean salinity does not change. By the way, the ocean does not have the same pH all over the place. It varies. There's nothing we could do with CO2 that's going to make the ocean more acid. All right, it's not happening. That's another fallacy that was started. The ocean salinity is what it is and what it always will be. It changes with temperature, it changes with currents, it changes with volcanic activity. It's constantly in a state of flux. There's no absolute salinity of the ocean or acidity. We're not acidifying. Ocean acidification is what they're calling it. We're not acidifying the ocean. My, oh my, these wonderful claims. Islands are not sinking. None of the small islands in the West Pacific have gone underwater. Why? Because the oceans aren't rising. In fact, if anything, if any place is seeing water rising, it's mostly because land is sinking on its own. You know, we have that going on in the New Orleans area. There are other places around the country and around the world where because of the weight of either building on the land or just natural subsidence, land does not just stay fixed. It moves. Mountains are building and shrinking all the time. Appalachians, Rockies, they are not stagnant. You don't see it. It takes time. Same thing with rising and sinking land. That's just a common thing in nature. The idea that somehow it's sinking because the water's rising, so you think of water coming up and you're saying, ooh, the water's rising. No, the land could be sinking. That's a different thing. And that probably has nothing to do with man either. In fact, most times the land is sinking because that's the natural ebb and flow of the tectonic plate we're on, of the continent we're on. Got to understand this stuff. What other stupid claims have been made? Hurricanes. Look, let's go to the bottom line. Hurricane activity has been at all-time lows. We're about to set a record for the quietest hurricane season ever, at least since we've been recording hurricane seasons using satellites back in the 1960s, and it'll be one of the quietest ever in history. We've only had two hurricanes, maybe a third will develop. Even if we have three, that matches 1972 and 1962. No other year has had fewer since 1960. Then if we go longer than that, there have been some years without, but those are years that we didn't have satellites. We may have missed them out over the oceans. Either way, three hurricanes in a year, even if there's four, you're talking things you don't see. I mean, this is all-time record type stuff, or tied for the all-time record, or in second place. And this isn't just this year. In recent years, our hurricane activity has been dropping off. Total energy around the globe for hurricanes dropping off. It's not just the Atlantic. The Pacific has been quieter as well. Southern hemisphere too. Quieter hurricane activity. We're supposed to get more with global warming. We've had fewer hurricanes, they haven't been as strong, and we haven't had a Category 3 or greater, a major hurricane, hit the United States in 8 years. An all-time record. And we've been tracking that since 1900. 8 years. Tornadoes. Supposed to be getting more of them. They're supposed to be getting worse. We are going to set a record for the fewest tornadoes ever in a year in 2013. We've had one F5 made news because it happened to hit near a major city, Oklahoma City. If not, it would have been an F5 out in the middle of nowhere. Other than that, we have seen, I think it's 600-something tornadoes this year, a ridiculously low number. We normally see about 1,200-1,300 in a year. We're less than half that. It's a very quiet pattern right now. I don't expect to see a lot more tornadoes before the end of the year. We're going to set or at least threaten records. So, what's going on? Wildfires. Oh, there's supposed to be worse drought. Nope. Drought's improving this year. The drought we saw last year was nothing unusual. It's something we saw in the 50s. We saw a little bit in the 80s. We saw worse droughts in the 30s. Okay, so nothing unusual there. but drought this year, much improved, and we're getting rid of the rest of it over the next few months. Okay, what else? Wildfires. 64% of normal wildfires, actually 64% of the 10-year average this year. Just above half the 10-year average of wildfires and the acres burned. We're way down in wildfires. Okay, flooding. Hard to find a headline about flooding unless you look for Boulder, maybe Nashville, and Missouri and Arkansas had some flooding this year. Four spots had flooding. Boulder was the worst, and it was just a small area. You got to understand, Boulder's a small town near Denver. Yeah, the flooding was devastating there. If it had hit 20, 30 miles northwest of there, it would have been in the middle of nowhere. No one would have noticed it. Happened to hit in the town. Okay, fine. Washed a lot of things out, killed some people. Bad news. Is flooding getting worse? No. If anything, it's hard to find it. If not for Boulder and a few other places, like I told you this year, flooding was not a big deal this year. There was flooding. You get flooding every year. But major flooding, major river flooding, devastating, damaging river flooding? Nope, numbers are down. Can you find something that's gotten worse for me? Please. So no more flooding, no worse flooding, no increase in wildfires, no increase in droughts, no increase in temperature, no increase in hurricanes, no increase in tornadoes. What the heck have we seen increase with all this global warming? CO2 is at 400 parts per million. We need to get it up over 1,000, really, for a good, healthy planet. People are panicking at 400, and nothing is happening. Nothing. And the desperation on the left is disgusting. Laughable, palatable, pathetic. You come up with a word. Look at what they did with Hurricane Sandy. Barely a hurricane, by the way. When it got to the East Coast, technically it moved inland as a tropical storm. It wasn't even a hurricane. It actually was a hybrid. Should have been kept as a hurricane moving inland for insurance and other purposes. It really had all the winds and everything else. But that's the hurricane center for you. But the bottom line is, Sandy was a minimal hurricane. But it was so destructive, so flooding. No, it wasn't Sandy. It was a hybrid. It merged with another storm coming out of the U.S. That has happened many times in the past. This is nothing unusual. We just haven't seen it for a while. How soon we forget, because very few people look back at history. Look back at the 1800s, early 1900s. We saw this before. The New England, was it called the Long Island Express? Look up that hurricane. You want to talk about a nasty hurricane. But the fact is, Sandy was nothing unusual. And yet people looked at that and say, see what global warming did? Global warming didn't do anything. The ocean water temperatures were nothing unusual along Sandy's path. The storm itself was weak. It was the fact that it merged with another storm across the United States that made it strong. That's all. Very simple to explain. But this is how desperate they've gotten. They look for single events to blame and say that it's global warming. But if I were to do the same thing, they would say, you can't take one cold event and say it's global cooling. And they would be right. Single events are weather. They're not climate. But they try and make it climate. When they see an extreme event, because there's so few of them, they point to it as a sign of climate change. Just like they did with the F5 tornado in Oklahoma City, they tried to blame it on climate change. You see, they can't stand on science because there is no science to back up the hoax of global warming. There isn't. So all they could do is make claims and then come at you when you try and make the same claims. But when I try and make those claims, I'm making them knowing that I'm using their tactics. So if I say, look, we just had a big snowstorm. You see that global cooling? I know that that's false. And they would point it out. But when they see a heat wave, they say it's global warming. Nothing to do with it. You can't have it both ways. And they don't. They're losing. Big time, by the way. The public doesn't care about this anymore. That's why you haven't heard any news on this. One day when that report came out, there was the latest IPCC report, came out in late September. One day it made headlines. You know why? Because we had Syria going on, stuff in the Middle East. We had budget shutdown talks going on, and nobody cared anymore. And you know what? Global climate change has been on the bottom of polling lists for months now. In fact, actually for a number of years. As far as importance in people's lives, healthcare, taxes, things like that, global climate change, nobody cares about. The only people who really care are the ones still in government who want that regulation, who want the billions of dollars associated with it, who want that global power structure centered under the United Nations and the IPCC. But it's not going to happen. That's never going to happen. It's done now. Now it's a matter of the stragglers hanging on to try and get what they can. And this latest report from the IPCC and the United Nations led a lot of countries to start saying, forget this, we're backing out of the green thing, we're going back to fossil fuels, because they saw what was really in that report. In fact, some countries put pressure on the people writing the report to make it sound like global warming was a big deal, which they did, because they didn't want to give up their agendas. But England, France, Germany, Spain doing it now, giving up on it. They're done. Norway, fossil fuels, because they're cheap, they're clean, they're efficient, they're always there. Solar and wind are not any of those things. And that's why this hoax is crashing down. But it's still there. You're still going to have your believers, just like any good cult. You're still going to have those who believe in the leader until everybody in the cult dies off or something. And that's probably what's going to happen here. You're going to have people who believe this till they die. And that's fine. They'll die. We all do. But the thing is, the fact is, global warming was never an issue, not man-made global warming. And even if it was natural global warming, it's not an issue either. The way to handle it, and now studies have shown this as well, and there's a great video online, a video series online, some fantastic interviews done by an Australian. His last name is Topher. I forget his first name. And you could just look up 50 to 1 project. But the fact is, even if man was warming the planet, which we're not, the cost of simply adapting is much, much less than the cost of all the regulation to try and control the climate, because we can't control the climate. So you're actually destroying businesses, destroying economies, destroying people's freedom in an effort to control something that can't be controlled, but really it's about an agenda for power. If you were really interested in the science of it, what you would do is spend that money on adaptation. If the planet warms, we learn to cool ourselves. If the planet cools, we learn to warm ourselves and to grow plants that can be more resistant to colder weather. Man is great at adapting, but no one likes to live under the thumb of excessive regulation. I'm meteorologist Rich Apuzzo. You've been listening to our annual update here on the Flypod of climate change. The latest report from the IPCC says there's more certainty. The report has actually less factual data than ever before, and now shows more uncertainty, and has proven that every forecast made in previous reports from the IPCC and the United Nations, every single forecast has failed. And they will continue to do so. And I look forward to the day I'm no longer doing these updates, which may be next year, because there will be very little to talk about, except maybe global cooling and the problems we have to face to adapt to a cooling climate. You've been listening to this global warming hoax update here on the Flypod. I am, again, meteorologist Rich Apuzzo with Sky Eye Weather. I run that company. We serve a lot of private clients. They love our forecast because we are accurate. We are factual. We don't live with agendas. They pay us to provide them with real climate and weather outlooks. And that's what we do at Sky Eye Weather and SkyEyeWeather.com. You just keep doing what you do and fighting for freedom. I and many other great scientists, and I'm not one of those, but I will put myself at least in the realm of these greats, will fight this battle. We will win this battle. We'll take science back so that you can have your freedom back.